Edsel is not able to be with us today, and she, though characteristically, would not let us down. Not yet, Susie. We haven't had a lot of chance to practice this. And I get to read Barbara's talk. The thing is that I'm getting so blind that I had my secretary blow it up. And I still can't read it. Actually, let me give it a try, and then I may, Jan. Will it make me look taller? Barbara's title is The Economics of Professional Work Years and Retirement Years, and it follows perfectly from Sydney's comments. She says that this brief presentation is not focused toward women only. It, in fact, is directed toward both professional women and men, as will become obvious through these comments. The first question that must be addressed is whether the economic situation of women has improved over the years, as feminism has suggested. I decided when Judy asked me to join this group, nothing schizophrenic here, no, when Judy, good-looking Judy, yes, graciously asked me to join this group, I decided to simply write down various comments that appeared on TV and in written material over a two-month span. That is, I wanted to sample recent statements that might be relevant to this topic. My first overhead is from the Lawrence Journal, Lawrence Journal World Newspaper. What an auspicious title for the Lawrence newspaper. It is an advertisement for some project. Now, first of all, it should be clearly noted that the bird is a she. Further, she, the bird, doesn't contribute to solutions, but to music. The advertisement gets around any gender problems by saying, it's an old proverb. This stereotype has been around for years. Women are happy, smiling, singing humans, but they don't solve problems. Tell that to our Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright. Let us move on to other statements I collected. Ooh, we're getting good, Susie. A woman on Frontline said, during my 22 years of marriage, I was happy. When my children left, I divorced. I realized I was not free for my whole marriage. Third, one statistic was reported on TV. Women undergo domestic violence every 15 seconds. Fourth, child caregivers, mostly women, take only the minimum wage, which is not considered a living wage. I feel like speeding up so she looks like Lucy on that. Three out of every five households. Three out of every five households that contain women bring in only poverty wages. Six. Will you want to work when you are 65 or 70? Well, you have to. Seven, the answer in one in three women can't retire. They must supplement their small income by some type of job. Eight, one in five children lives with at least one addicted parent, usually a female. Nine, females pay 68% more out of pocket for drugs than males. In a recent example, men are pressuring doctors and insurance companies to buy Viagra. Women, however, usually have to pay for birth control pills. On the Lair News Hour, an elderly male was interviewed about his thoughts on Clinton's sex problem. Ten. He summed up his interview with the statement, God gave little boys a penis and a brain. That is correct and okay in my book. Have you ever heard God gave little girls a vagina and a brain? And that is correct and okay. I have to tell Barbara, though, that I think his statement was trying to refer to the fact that those aren't different organs. Number 11. Uh-oh, Susan's getting the hook out. 11. Another statistic gives some information on who are most, these pages are so huge, deprived of one of our most basic needs, food. The survey indicated that most are women under age 17, unemployed, and white. The Associated Press recently released a story about a single mother and her three children.
12.
The mother was studying nursing full-time in order to ultimately provide for her family. She wrote a letter to her Arizona state representative suggesting that lawmakers improve child care for welfare recipients attending school. The reply she received from the state representative suggested she should improve her financial situation by marrying again. These examples suggest that women have not progressed very far, either monetarily or in terms of how others behave toward them, in spite of many years of the feminist movement. There are exceptions, of course, but for the general mass of females, life is still difficult. To change this, there are many possible solutions, but the one I will stress here can be manipulated by women themselves without getting others to change their behavior. The solution is money. People have often stated in various ways the power of money. It is one source of power, and power is one way to level the field of inequality. I listened to a television program recently that described young prepubescent boys' interest in magic. It seems that there is a large difference between boys and girls who take up magic tricks. In fact, when young children are shown as magicians, it is always a boy who wears the hat and cape, not girls. Girls are always sawed in half. The moderator of the program analyzed why interest in magic is gender-linked. He pointed out that to be able to produce a certain result that the viewer does not think is possible, and that remains a secret as to how it is done, one must convey power. Little boys are interested in activities that give them power, so even at an early age, interest in engaging in behavior that is considered power-related is boys' work. Somewhere from birth to the interest in magic, someone taught little boys the reinforcing attributes of power. This is not a lesson learned by little girls. Perhaps dependence is behavior that is being reinforced for females. As behavior analysts, it is important to see how Skinner viewed power. For example, Lawrence Smith, in writing about Skinner's later view of the philosophy of behaviorism, endorsed the Baconian equation of knowledge with power. Skinner characterized operant behavior as, quote, essentially the exercise of power. It has an effect on the environment. That an organism should act to control the world around it is as characteristic of life as breathing or reproduction. We can no more stop controlling nature than we can stop eating or digesting food. End of quote. Somehow, males learn the technology of controlling behavior, especially the technology that results in power. And more than just power in general, boys learn money power in particular. If women learned how to set up the contingencies of money power, they would not be hungry, have lesser paid jobs, lack freedom, be battered, never retire, pay more money for other services, and not have to marry or stay married in order to rest. My thesis is simply, women should learn the procedures of acquiring money power early in life and practice it throughout life. I'm not talking about getting money to be a conspicuous spender. In fact, spending is probably the one behavior that will nullify money power. Several years ago, I was talking to several women colleagues of mine, and I mentioned that by the time they retire, they should be worth about $1 million. This figure can include the cost of the home, security, retirement funds, not Social Security, and other assets that can be sooner or later turned into cash. By the year 2025, this figure of one will no doubt be much higher, probably $1.5 million. In order for a professional to retire and continue to live roughly the same life as they are accustomed, $1 million is enough. Now, by the time you retire, many of you will be making over $1,000 in your base pay. The next overhead, 14, will illustrate what you need to do with part of monthly salary. column on the far left lists the various until one might retire at age 60. Of course, if you wait until 65 or 70 years to retire, then you have 5 or 10 months of pre-retirement savings to help. Across the top are dots that represent savings needed to just post-retirement incomes of $50, $60, $70, $80, and $90. For example, if you have 5 more years to go before you retire at 60, then you would need to have $219,999 a year for 5 years in order to have $50,000 a year in income. Likewise, if you have 5 years more of work ahead before you turn 60, that is, if you're about to pass of age, then you need to save $15,072 a year in order to retire with $50,000 income. Since I'm predicting that many of you young professionals will be over $100,000 in salary in 20 years, then you need to tend to the column heading of $90,000. Those of you who are about 48 to retire in 20 years at age 60, then you will need to save $5,750,000. It is better to know these now than when you are sailing around somewhere on a sailboat at age 50, she says. Your annual savings would need to be $174,000 and change annually for 10 years before the age of 60. Now, the next emphasizes the need to start saving up. The example show $2,000 a year IRA contract starting at year 1 through year 8 across a possible 40-year span. This is seen in the column entitled, see it there? In the late term, yearly contributions of $2,000 begin until year 9, but contributions continue through year 40. Can we pull that up just a tad? Because we'll need that. The interesting comparison for both columns are entitled Income and Earnings. The IRA that had 8 years of dollars resulted in a $6,000 investment. A late-funded IRA had 32 years of starting at year 9, resulting in a $6,000 investment. Not only funding program contributes $1,000 less to the IRA program, but when you look at the earnings of late programs, the early fund yielded $515,188, which is $136,692 more than late funded program. An example of how compounding makes a big difference. The final and most important point I would want to make information is that every individual has their own retirement plan, its name and none other. There are no limits to our read model. I just had some achievements that I'm proud of as well, but I'd like to emphasize that the challenges we faced was out of control. In fact, I've said that I have become an expert in self-injury the old-fashioned way by engaging in it. I felt particularly well-equipped to be a mother, after all, given my grounding in the principles of learning and behavior analysis, only to see that my kids aren't perfect. In fact, what I've done, as Maria said, is I've changed the definition of success. If they're out of jail and they're off my nickel, I have achieved something here. In fact, what's more, they will tell you that I am not a perfect mom. In fact, perfect isn't even the word. I'm working toward passable. And just when I was beginning to feel real smug because I was getting smarter about my life, menopause hit. Now, if your hormones ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And I found that it wasn't so much that I experienced depression, it was that I caused it. So you need to know that there are no pedestals here, just lifts in my shoes so I can walk through each day and see over podiums, yes, indeed. But through these challenges, I've learned some lessons and some strategies that may have helped me and may be useful to you. Some have clear behavior analytic reference. Others simply rely on old adages and homilies, but they're all true to me. And I'll finish them, I promise, in a minute and a half. One, is to learn and practice organizational skills, time management, task completion, efficiency in your operations. Can you learn work ethic? I'm not sure, but try to. I pursue these skills as seriously as any content area in your field. They cut across all areas, and they will spell the difference between being caught in endless processing and actually being able to successfully achieve goals. I see young, very capable of professionals who spend more time getting haircuts than they do learning the skills of organizing and orchestrating their professional and personal lives. Second, take time and apply energy to being reinforcing. Now, that's different than learning social skills. I'm a little sensitive when people say I have social skills. They haven't said it lately. They used to say I think it was a social skill. The fact is that I think social skills carry a kind of plastic connotation. What I'm trying to convey here is something much more like the golden rule. You like people to be kind to you. You like them to extend themselves to you. You like them to support you. I'm simply suggesting in this lesson that you try to do the same. You know, we preach reinforcement, but its use is not necessarily obvious to all behavior analysts. We know who they are. The problem is they don't. So the second lesson is reinforce others as you would like to be reinforced yourself. And the third is don't confuse the reinforcers of others with your own reinforcers. We've all wasted lots of time, lots of effort, engaging in things that aren't right for us, pursuing things that we're told we should like, but we don't. Similarly, don't confuse the value of the goals and activities of others with your own. In other words, define your contributions your own way. And by the way, I have seen almost no correlation between the visibility of a contribution and its functional impact. Private good deeds carry as much or more weight than highly publicized ones. Fourth, live each day as though it is your last, as though you won't have the opportunity to correct a mistake or apologize for a hurt, reproportion your time, appreciate life, experience joy. Some decisions I'd make again, others I certainly would not. The point is to arrange your schedules to ensure the frequent, daily, consuming of a good life. And finally, treat yourself as you would your best friend. Treat yourself as you would a client, not a student. We have to abuse them for their own good. But with your best friend, with your clients, you wouldn't demand that she complete huge ratios for little tiny reinforcers. You wouldn't deride her for the errors she makes or the slow learning. You wouldn't dwell on her mistakes. You wouldn't diminish her accomplishments. Of course you wouldn't do that to your friend or to your client. Well then, don't treat yourself that way. Be gentle with yourself. Be behavioral. Are there questions or comments from the group? I'm not sure exactly how much time we have, but we have a few minutes if you'd like. You've really hung in so wonderfully. Are there questions or comments? Yes.
I just wanted to say how much I appreciate all of you putting your time and effort into this. I wish that you guys can be the first
honor
that I ever attended, and we'll do it
with you. Thanks. It's been remarkable for me, and in fact, Maria and I were speaking last night, and as we've developed this theme, that we would like to take this into other formats and forms. So if you have suggestions to that effect, otherwise we were just going to make cold calls. So if you have other ideas, we'd appreciate hearing those.
This is the first time I've had this kind of experience, and obviously from this room, you've generated a lot of interest. So I'd really like to see something like this become an annual event.
With a bigger room.
Well, thank you. Yes, Rusty.
Wonderful models that were represented here that even a male can take advantage of.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Oh, I would like to say, as a grandmother and somebody who has her own business and having shared some of these experiences, including two marriages, and many bells were rung here, but the information I wish it was given today that I wish I had at 20 was Barbara Edsel's. Mm-hmm. Don't forget what she said. It's easy to do. It's easier than you think. And all you have to do is just do it. I wish I'd known that then.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming, and we'll be back.